You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode, our first mini-pod of the new year, it is Matt Thompson, our lead prospect writer. Matt, how you doing?
I'm great, man. These are my favorite things to do. I look forward to these.
It's really the only reason we're doing the team preview still. because so many people last year loved these mini pods, and if you're new to FWFB, new to, you know, just coming out to check out the mini pods, this was probably our most popular segment or thing that we did last preseason, and it's just quick, short, little podcasts where Matt talks about the top prospects, and people really seem to enjoy them, so that's why we're doing them again. So
got to give the people what they want,
right? Exactly. And we're starting off with an interesting system today.
Yeah,
The Detroit Tigers. Before we get going, though, just want to remind everybody where you can reach you on Twitter, which is Matt. Why don't you just say it?
It's MDTopFWFB.
And you can reach me on Twitter, at Justin Mason, FWFB. And we are currently working on our draft guide, which will be out in the beginning of February, hopefully. So it'll be for a real cheap price, probably about, I don't know, $6-7, something like that. Get on Amazon and iTunes, and maybe we'll have a little link on the website for you to get that out. So definitely that will include every single one of Matt's extensive prospect previews for each,
they will.
Each team. We also will have a preview for each major league team, a bunch of articles on strategies, different formats, things like that. So definitely
and one strong advantage of this is it'll be a live document.
Yes.
I will,
as long as iTunes and Amazon will let me, I will edit it as we go through the preseason. And if Matt does a midseason update, I will add those into it. So that way, you know, if you're like, oh man, it's halfway through the season, how good are these, you know, prospect information? I will update them as we go on into the season. So that $7 or $6 or however much it will go a long way. Maybe I'll make it $6.90.
Ooh, very nice.
Nice. All right. let's talk some Tigers. The Tigers definitely don't have a poor system.
No. Most improved system, I think, in the last about 12 months, I'd say. Most improved system. For me.
All right. Well, tell me about some guys that maybe might be close to the major league level.
Close to the majors. We'll go with the guy that's number two on my list, Kristen Stewart. The big lefty corner outfielder, and he's a corner outfielder because there's really nowhere else to put him in the field. With Miggy Cabrera around for a while, the DH spot might be hard to fill out in Detroit for Stewart. But ultimately, I think Stewart is destined for that position, but everyone loves their three true outcome guys nowadays, and I think that's what we have with Stewart here. Power's the big name of the game. Last year in Double-A, he slashed .256, .335, .501, hit 28 home runs, knocked in 86 runs, so he's a run producer in the middle of the lineup type guy. Like I said, his game is built around the long ball, drawing walks and strikeouts, hence the three true outcome kind of guy. He's a plus power guy, so I'm interested to see how that plays with the new major league run scoring environment, which has made it a lot harder to evaluate, you know, prospect power numbers they should put up. But in traditional landscape for home runs, I think Stewart can hit 30. So I guess nowadays he's got upside for 40, I guess. But I do think his at-bats are going to be severely capped. He's probably going to have platoon issues. He's shown them a little bit now. You got to take off the plate appearances off the top on that. He will walk enough to be somewhat competent. Like I said, he's going to strike out. He probably comes up in the second half of the season for Detroit. So Kristen Stewart's a guy to track. He's a good ale-only play because he's a bad team, and he's the type of guy that you're not going to keep in the minors very long because what's his ultimate upside? You know what I mean? He's already kind of there with the power. He's not an athletic guy. You're not really working on your defense with a guy like this. So he potentially, if he was to give a, which they won't do this, but he's the type of guy on a good organization would have a chance to make the roster out of spring training. But Detroit's in no position to do that with him. But does that make sense? Like, yeah. You know, he's Detroit. Detroit's not going to win anything this year, and they know that. So they're not going to call up Stewart.
Why would they
early.
Start his clock?
Right.
You know, if it's the last year of Victor Martinez's deal, maybe they want to try to showcase him a little bit, try to move him at the deadline, see if he comes, you know, gets back to health. Maybe there's an AL team looking for a DH kind of player, or at least off the bench bat. So I understand, you know, he may not get his shot until after the trade deadline type thing.
Yeah. He's like I said, though, the upside with him is going to be limited just because, I mean, he's a really pull-happy left-handed hitter with good power, and he strikes – like he's done a very good job of cutting the strikeouts and not pulling the ball as much over this last season. And one bonus about Stewart is he's led every league he's played in full-time, he's led that league in home runs.
Wow.
So it's hard to argue with the power. So he's a potential middle of the order bat on a bad team, which is always fantasy gold. So
anybody else that's close to the majors?
In Detroit's system, not particularly. A lot of their guys are kind of in the double A range, which I guess is close to the majors, but not in the sense of Detroit because they're not going to call him up. You know what I mean? Mm. But Michael Gerber is the guy I want to run by real quick. He was in AAA for a majority of last season, hit .304, .373, .496, 14 homers, 10 stolen bases. The upside on him is he's like the opposite of Stewart. He's the safer version of Detroit outfielder. Doesn't have an impact tool, so he kind of slides under the radar. Not really a center fielder either, so he's not going to be on the real prospect list either because he doesn't have that athleticism. But he's a really good hitter. He's hit every level. Takes good at bats, you know. With two strikes, he makes a noticeable difference in the swing. Did a very positive job of cutting down strikeouts, which were somewhat of a problem. He's not going to be one guy that's going to carry you in any sort of category, but Michael Gerber is a guy who should see significant time in Detroit. I mean, look at the garbage they put on their corner outfield last year after they traded JD and Upton. It was what? Jim Aducci, Alex Presley. So Michael Gerber and Kristen Stewart can take the outfield corner spots, which are wide open. So he's a name to follow. Not high upside, but you could do worse.
All right. And then who are the guys that are farther away, or do you have another guy that might be?
One more guy that's major league ready, only because he has to be. It was the top pick in the Rule 5 draft, Victor Reyes. decent little. I think he's ultimately a fourth outfielder. Came over from the Arizona system. I've seen him play a couple times over at Kane County, which is a low A affiliate for Arizona Diamondbacks. He's a good hitter. He gets knocks for taking plays off sometimes and not being the most motivated player. But being in the big leagues this year, I think could be enough to push him. I always hate Rule 5 guys, though, in the sense that they might stick in the majors this year. But, I mean, they could also get like 150 plate appearances. And especially in the American League, it's easy to hide somebody. And it kind of loses a whole year of development. So I don't think the upside's sky high. But again, Victor Reyes, we just went over that poor outfield situation in Detroit and the Major League Club. He could fill a spot out there too. So he's a name to follow for AL only. 4 home runs, 18 stolen bases. Not very efficient though. .292, .333, .339, and double A.
All right. What about guys that are farther away from the majors but might have some more impact?
This is where Detroit system is very, very much improved. The top prospect in the system for me is Franklin Perez, the right-handed pitcher that came over from Houston in the Verlander deal. And according to my rankings, which are obviously geared toward the fantasy baseball slant, they got Perez in that deal. They got Taz Kamerman, who I have number 4 on the list. And then they also got the catching prospect Jake Rogers, who I have number 8. So they got their 1-4-8 in the trade for Verlander on my list. Obviously, the deal worked out amazing for Houston, but the deal for Detroit seems to be pretty well now. Perez is a very underrated guy. He's kind of the equivalent to you know, a guy that's like he's equivalent to the hitting prospect that's well-rounded with no plus tool, but just puts up numbers. That's him on the mound. 78 strikeouts in 86 innings, but only 27 walks. WHIP was 1.14. One of the youngest players in Double A, being 19 years old. He started the year in the Cal League, was a former third baseman, got moved to the mound a few years back. He throws all three of his off-speed pitches for strikes to go with that fastball. He's kind of the boring prospect, but he's got a decent amount of upside. The changeup is going to be the best pitch. He's got also has a slider and a big 12-6 curveball, which surprising to me. You know how high I am on Tristan McKenzie. If you follow my stuff, I love Tristan McKenzie, the pitcher for the Indians. Perez was actually voted the top pitcher in the Cal League over McKenzie by Baseball America, and what they do is they pull opposing managers and stuff like that. So it's coming from guys that know that league and know that area he's playing at, and he's voted over McKenzie. I don't have him personally over McKenzie, but that's still really good.
That's pretty high praise.
Good, yeah. And the only knock really on Perez, which for me isn't really any anymore, he gets a lot of criticism because he's got a smaller frame, and scouts and evaluators are concerned he's not going to throw 200 innings. But who does anymore? I mean, that's holding that against somebody. To me, right in this day and age, is akin to not voting anyone into the Hall of Fame because nobody should get 100%. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's stupid logic. Guys, it's becoming a bullpen game. It's becoming five and fly for starting pitchers nowadays. And holding 200 innings against somebody nowadays, at Perez's age, being 19 years old, and you're going to criticize him for not being able to throw 200 innings. If he throws 200 innings at 19 years old, you're going to criticize him too because he's thrown too much. Mm-hmm. So I'll take the guy with the question marks. I'm not opposed to the small righty thing. There's a stigma against small right-handed pitchers. I'll take him. He did miss a month of the season with knee soreness. And he got scratched from his last start of the season due to a blister. But those are the only injuries he's had. He's been pretty clean with arm-wise. I think ETA for him is 2019, probably later on in the season. But he's an arm that he could move fast if the Detroit needed him to come up this year. He could, because like I said, he's 19 and already pitched in Double A. So he's a guy to watch for sure. I'm very, very high on Franklin Perez. He's probably going to slot somewhere in the 50 to 60 range on my top 100 list.
All right, nice. What about Matt Manning? Where do you have him? Because I just picked him up in a Dynasty League. So
I have him
selfish.
As – no, you're good. I have him as my third prospect behind Perez and Stewart. So I'm a fan of Manning. First-round pick in 2016. You know how it's hard to find information on a lot of these minor league guys. And Matt Manning, I was looking up last year in 2017 on why he didn't pitch. He didn't start pitching until May. He didn't have an injury, but the Tigers, you know, they don't report everything because you don't have to. They sent him to extend his spring training to start the year and because they wanted to keep his innings down, and they wanted him to work on a new arm slot. They did this because, you know, they didn't think he was getting the bite on his curveball he should, and they thought the command could be better. And he's very much improved. He threw only 51 innings, but he struck out 62 guys. He walked a little bit too many, 25 and 51 innings, a little bit too much. But the command will tighten up. He's an athletic kid, so I'm always going to bet on the athlete, multi-sport athlete in high school. I'm always going to bet on those kind of guys. Focusing solely on baseball now. Like I said, last year he was drafted in 2016, so that's not a full season. In 2017, they held him in extended, so that wasn't a full season. So 2018 is going to be a big year for Manning, and I'm glad you got him now in your dynasty because he's the type of guy whose value could shoot up the charts with a full season this year and put up good numbers. But you look at him, fastball 93 miles an hour. He throws a lot of strikes, sometimes too many. But again, I'll take that because he's an athlete who will refine it. Two potential above-average secondaries and the 12-6 hammer curveball, which is nasty, and a very nice circle changeup. Curveball is better now, but ultimately I think the changeup is going to be the pitch that's going to decide whether he's a one or a mid-rotation guy, just because he might have a little bit of issues with lefties now because the arm slot is a little more over the top, and it could be easier for them to pick up. So if that changeup comes on, he's looking at a future stud here. But it's going to be a while. It's going to be low A in probably 2018. Maybe later on in 2020, beginning of 2021 for Manning, but he looks legit.
All right, talk about some Daz Cameron. Got a little MLB bloodline. Kind of was a late first round pick for the Astros a few years ago. People thought he may be a little bit more toolsy than talented, but seems to have broken out a little bit last year. So, what are your thoughts on Daz Cameron?
Yeah, this is what a breakout season looks like. That's in what he did in 2017. He's finally healthy. He's banged up in 2015 and 2016, 271, 351, 463, 14 homers, and 32 stolen bases. His first two seasons of his, you know, shortened, abbreviated pro career so far, he's only played 91 games because of the aforementioned injuries. But he's got a power-speed combination that goes under the radar. He's got the above-average-to-average skills across the board, you know, above-average power, above-average speed. The hit tool might only be average because there is a little bit of swing and miss in the game, but he's not going to be a defensive stud like his pops. He's above average at everything, which is great. But that's also like the type when you evaluate prospects, you learn like people have certain types of players that get overvalued. And Cameron being an outfielder, that's an above average player across the board, is a very underrated skill set and very underrated type of player. If you took Cameron and took his exact skill sets and put him at shortstop, he's like a top 10 prospect in baseball. But because he plays outfield, you know, he's looked at lower. Like the skills here, the hit tool is probably a half a grade lower than someone like Gleyber Torres. But Daz Cameron's skills are very comparable otherwise. And I'm a huge fan. Like I said, the only question is the hit tool. He strikes out too much to be an asset, really, in the batting average category, but he's not going to kill you. The stock is way up, and especially after a trade to Detroit, you go from a Houston system that's packed in prospects to get traded to Detroit, where you are the center fielder of the future. It's a very nice thing for Cameron, and he got the $4 million bonus he looked at from Houston. Doesn't look so bad after the season you just put up.
All right. What about some other guys in the system that are worth either stashing or keeping an eye on?
Isaac Paredes, they got him from the Cubs in the Justin Wilson trade. You look at the stat line, 252, 338, 387, 11 homers, 2 stolen bases. Doesn't jump out at you. 70 RBIs, that was a pretty nice number. But again, RBI isn't really predictive of anything. But he came over from the Cubs in that Justin Wilson trade. He was 18 years old in the Midwest League, which is an amazing thing to be able to do, put up an above-average stat line while playing shortstop in the Midwest League against guys that are on average about 3 years older than you. So he's a nice find out of Mexico. The Cubs signed him for $800,000 out of Mexico. He might end up outgrowing shortstop. He's a little bit bigger guy, plus arm. I comp him to like Johnny Peralta down the line, which everyone thinks of Johnny Peralta now, but he's a pretty productive player in Detroit. He's similar in size, similar in the bat speed, the projected 20 homer pop, the defensive concerns, all similar to Peralta. So that's my comp for Paredes. And he's another guy to watch in that system because he doesn't get a lot of hype. He should. He's very comparable. The numbers are very comparable to what Gleyber Torres did in the Midwest League in the same organization as Paredes at the time. And Paredes was younger. So I really like Alex Faedo, who was their first-round draft pick this year out of University of Florida. I think he's going to move rather quickly as well. He didn't pitch after his monster performance in the College World Series when he went 14 and a third shutout innings in Omaha with 22 strikeouts, won the most outstanding player. He talks about getting picked at number one overall for a while there until he had a kind of an off senior season, recovered at the end, got healthy, had two knee surgeries in the off season before he got drafted. Surgery on both knees, so minor ones, but still surgeries nonetheless. Does a lot of strikes, manipulates the fastball very well. Similar to like a Dakota Hudson in the Cardinal system, but more strikeouts. Faedo has a chance at being a back-end top 100 guy for me because I like him a lot. Bo Burrows, strikeouts came back for him last year. He started organizational mandate for him. Again, judge players, when you have to do the research and look at this stuff. He had a organizational mandate to throw the breaking ball and change up more last year because he was very fastball dependent because as a high school kid that throws in the mid-90s, do you really need another pitch? And that's what a problem a lot of guys run into when they get out of high school and just blowing people away. Got to come up to pro ball, and they don't have the development of the changeup and curveball that they need. So he spent most of the season last year throwing the off-speed pitches more than the fastball, which is why the strikeouts are way down. In 2017, they let him go back to normal, and he's over a K per inning, cut the walks down. He's another potential mid-rotation guy, be in Double-A next year. I'm very, very – I like Burrows a lot. I think the upside is a little bit capped, doesn't have an out pitch. But he's a nice mid-rotation arm, and Detroit's a good place to pitch. AL Central should be a really, really weak division for next couple of years. So it's a perfect storm there.
Anybody else? Like maybe some sleeper guys or?
Yeah, I can touch on some sleeper guys for a minute. Let's see. My favorite guy out of this. Everyone knows who Kyle Funkhauser is. First round pick for the Dodgers. Went back to school, came out, was drafted in the fourth round. That didn't go very well. But he looks to be back, got the fastball velocity back. So he's a nice, but he's a mid rotation guy. If you want to bet on a swing like that, he put up very, very nice numbers in high A, as he should, though, being a guy that dominated college. 83 strikeouts and 62 innings, only 19 walks. So he's a guy to follow. Probably undervalued. Gregory Soto is a lefty that walks too many guys but gets the ground balls and strikeouts. He'll be a good fit in Comerica. Kind of cop him to Francisco Liriano in that aspect. So he's a nice guy to look. And Sam McMillan, I hate catching prospects, but he's a high school catching prospect that the Tigers took in the fifth round in 2017, and they signed him for $1 million to keep him from going to the University of Florida. Defensive first is the name of the game right now, which isn't all that exciting for a fantasy aspect, but he has the potential hit tool in the bag, and his approach is amazing. 288, 441 OBP, 432 slug. A catching prospect that young with a plus defensive profile already is encouraging because the bat's always the last thing to really come around. So if his hit tool and power, which both project out as average, come to fruition, you could be looking at potential. Now, I'm not predicting this, but if everything goes right, it could be like an Austin Hedges with an actual hit tool, which would be a very nice catcher.
Yeah, that would be – especially you know, Hedges hit 21 home runs, I think, last year or something
right.
like that.
And I think that's the power ceiling we're looking at for McMillan, who swings from the left side. But I think that's ultimately what you could be looking at for the power ceiling. And that puts him, what, top five catcher?
Yeah.
So he's a guy to file away. Like I said, if you heard me again, I feel like I'm repeating myself a lot. But if you ever listened to my stuff before, I'm very anti-rostering catching prospects.
Yes,
there's just so much.
Are.
Yeah, there's so many variables that you can't track. Like if one coach in the minor leagues doesn't like how you call a game, like he'll ding you for it for a month. Like, you don't know, it's all you hear about. Oh, I don't like how, you know, he so and so calls a game, even though he doesn't need to be in that level anymore. There's so many variables. Catchers from different countries need to have a grasp of the English language, dealing with English pitchers, and vice versa. So, that could be a reason to hold down because the guy might be better at that organization at teaching him the language. Like, there's so many variables. It's catching prospect, you can't just look at, oh, okay, he's hitting 330, he needs to be called up. There's so many more things, blocking, framing, stuff we can't. Really put numbers in from a fantasy sense. So I don't even deal with it. There's certain guys that are exceptions to the rules, and we'll cover some of them later on, but there's not many.
All right. Any last guys you want to touch on before we wrap it up?
No. The rest of it you can read in the guide. Ask me a lot of questions. Detroit's got a nice system, a couple of nice outfielders. I'll give you some names. I'm not going to go too much in depth on them. They got Duel Lugo from he was their joke of a return from the J.D. Martinez trade, which I don't know how that trade went down like it did. But especially with, you know, how he performed for Arizona, but he's a third base, probably utility infielder, offensive first. Mr. Jake Rogers, Mr. Rogers, it's my joke. He's a catching prospect, obviously, from he was in the Verlander trade, which I touched on earlier. Very nice offensive game. He's also drawn pre-draft. He drew defensive comparisons to Buster Posey. So he's very good on the defensive side of the ball. The offense, he's not going to be a slouch on the offensive side. 261, 350, 467, 18 homers, and 14 stolen bases between two high A clubs. His power is mostly pull only at this point. Hit tool is probably below average because I don't see him making enough adjustments to stop the pull heavy approach, and major league pitchers will be able to get him out. But I think somebody that hits 240 with decent OBP, hits 15 or so home runs, he could be like a Chris Iannetta, which isn't a bad place to be. But again, he's going to spend all next season at Double A, which is going to be by design, because him in Double A next year, as their primary catcher of the future, because he's more advanced than McMillan is right now, he's going to spend Double A catching Franklin Perez, Matt Manning, Alex Fado, Bo Burrows, and Kyle Funkhauser, who should all be in Double A at some point. So he's going to stay down there regardless of how he does, just so he can get some rapport with all those guys. So that's an exciting group of Double A players for Detroit this year. And by this time next year, especially with this, you know, with the number one pick in the draft coming into the system, they're going to have a lot of nice things to add to it. So it's going to be a nice system. It's going to get even better with the high draft picks.
Nice. All right. Well, that's going to wrap us up. Again, you can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTompFWFB. Me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. Look forward to doing a lot more of these mini pods with you, Matt, and hopefully everybody likes them again. They'll probably be about anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes, so and they come out at the end of the day. So hopefully you enjoy them. That's going to wrap us up for this episode. For Matt and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.